Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. Al Roker of NBC's Today Show brings millions of viewers the weather every morning. Also an author, Roker has now written his first book about the weather. And it's a sobering tale, even in an age when the consequences of Katrina, Sandy, Irene, and Lee are still being felt. His focus is the hurricane that in 1900 devastated Galveston, the island off Texas, killing thousands and forever changing how we consider such storms. Still relevant today are the lessons contained in Storm of the Century: tragedy, heroism, survival, and the epic true story of America's deadliest natural disaster, which is published by William Morrow. Al Roker, a pleasure to welcome you back to the Roundtable.
Ian, thank you so much.
Why did you want to write about this storm and this time?
You know, it kind of just happened. I was actually, about a little more than a year ago, I was kind of thinking about writing a book about Katrina and, you know, what we've learned since then. And, you know, all of a sudden, the more I was reading the data and looking at information and putting stuff together, I was like, you know what, this storm in 1900, I mean, my golly, this is still, even though upwards of 2,000 people died in Katrina, you know, this storm in 1900 is still the greatest number of deaths in a natural disaster in our country. I mean, 10,000 or more people perished in this storm. And it's like, so why? And could lives have been saved? You know, even though it was at the time, you know, we're at 1900, they don't have the technology we have. And the interesting thing was that they actually had access to some fairly accurate forecasts. They had, the fact of the matter is we still use the same instruments, basic instruments, today that they used in 1900. Differences: they're connected to computers, they're digital, there's radar and satellite and weather balloons and wireless weather soundings. But they had that capability due to the technology of the day, which was telephone and telegraph. The problem is the forecast was generated by a group of Jesuits in Cuba. And at the time, the U.S. Weather Bureau, run by a petty bureaucrat named Willis Moore, and that was under the War Department, there was the petty squabbling, again, political problems between the U.S. and Cuba. And the Weather Bureau in Washington, they said, look, we have to control our product. We have to control our message. We don't want local forecasters getting ahead of us or scaring people. And we certainly don't want information from the Cubans. And so even though they had the information and the forecast correct on this storm as it approached way in advance, probably a good 2 days, 3 days, nobody had that information so that the forecast. And there was a prevailing sense at the time that big storms had their own momentum and so they would curve naturally. And so Galveston was one of those cities that could have been in the eye of the storm, and it had been hit by smaller storms. But the preeminent hurricane specialist at the time, a guy named Isaac Klein, said, there's this curve. We don't need to build a seawall. Don't worry about it. It's going to be okay. And unfortunately, they didn't have the information they needed on September 8th. About 6 hours, 8 hours beforehand, Isaac Klein started to realize something was wrong. But by then, it was too late. They couldn't evacuate people. And upwards of 10,000 people died. You know, even if they had gotten the forecast, the devastation would have been still pretty complete physically. But I think far fewer lives would have been lost.
What made this storm so dangerous?
Well, it had 200. It was basically approaching a Category 5 storm. 200 mile per hour winds, 15 to 30 foot seas, and the geography of Galveston, you know, made this a vulnerable target. It's basically a sandbar in the Gulf that is either, most of the landmass is either at or slightly above sea level, some parts of it even below sea level. And so there's no protection. There were no barrier islands. They were the barrier island. And so when you have a storm surge like this at an astronomical high tide, which this is when this storm hit, it was the power of the water, the force of the storm surge, you know, ripped buildings off their foundations. The winds turned ordinary objects into deadly projectiles, and the flooding was catastrophic. And you combine those issues, and that's why almost a third of the population perished.
Did the aftermath of this storm change the way we react to forecasts, or change the way the storms are forecast?
Well, it was one of these things that's when they decided to revamp what they did at the U.S. Weather Bureau, and that local weather service offices, Weather Bureau offices, were responsible for their forecast and for their region, instead of this centralized forecast out of Washington, D.C. Eventually, Willis Moore lost his job, not because of incompetence, but because he tried to make an end move to get the job of the war secretary, the Secretary of War, and so he got fired. But it wasn't because of the incompetence that he showed during this and other decisions that he made. But yes, that all of a sudden changed the way, who did the forecast, who issued the forecast. It was the first major natural disaster that was responded to on a national basis. The local media, or the national media, being newspapers, really played a large hand in that. Joseph Pulitzer hired Clara Barton, the woman who founded the Red Cross, to spearhead the relief campaign. He said, "I'm putting you on a train. The train's loaded with supplies and personnel, and I want you to spearhead the effort. I will fit the bill." But they also, asked for donations from their readers. So it really kind of changed disaster relief in this country.
I want to go back to something you said a little earlier. You've commented frequently on the intersection of politics and the weather in modern times. And I just wonder what you make of the fact that the political world had a lot to do with the way we prepared in 1900, or didn't prepare, as the case may be. And nowadays, we've seen it in New York. We've certainly seen it in Congress. Are you scared at all when you see politics intersecting with the way we get ready for storms and so on?
Well, I think I'd like to believe, let's put it that way, that government, whether it's local, state, or federal, after Katrina, after Sandy, has changed the way they respond, the way they prepare, and the way they respond to natural disasters, especially weather disasters. I think you've seen better responses. I think the prep, the lead up, has been better. Now, look, the place where there is great conflict is the climate change debate, and that falls strictly upon along party lines. But when you couch the debate as about the environment, we had on our Wake Up With Al program Frank Luntz, who is a pollster. Many people regard him as a Republican pollster, but the data that he had was that when you ask people about the environment, protecting the environment, about changing, about making sure that there is policy enacted to take care of the environment, protect it, it pretty much gets universal support. The moment you call it climate change, where you stand on it depends on what your party affiliation is.
You went to school up here in upstate New York.
Yes.
And spent a lot of time over at WRVO, our colleagues.
Yes.
Is upstate New York a good place to get into the weather, or is it possible that the winters scare you off?
Well, look, I think it depends on what kind of weather you like. If you want to study oceanography and ocean currents and the effect of that on surfing, SUNY Oswego is probably not the place to be. But if you want to look at synoptic meteorology and lake effect snow and that sort of thing, then boy, what a great place to be.
How are things going at the Today Show and now? We watch it here at the station, but we also follow it in the tabloids, and I'm wondering what it's been like to be on the inside of that for the past couple
years. Well, look, I think like anything, it's like sausage. You like sausage, you just don't want to see how it's made. But in our instance, we have there's been some turmoil, but we have stayed, I think, pretty true to ourselves. We take care of each other, and I think it's showed in our on-air product, and our audience is coming back. We're competitive again with Good Morning America. So I like where we are. If this were a card game, I'd rather be playing our cards with our team members than the other guy.
Do you have to pay attention to that kind of stuff with the ratings?
I don't think you have to. I like to. I just find it interesting. If you care about what you do, you watch that stuff.
Is it ever frustrating? Because it's not an exact science. I mean, you put the best show on you can. Sometimes you're in third, sometimes you're in first. To know that, you know, the ratings matter so much?
I'm one of those people that you do your job and you get it done, and everything else will follow. And then, you know, that you just let the rest of it go where it is. There's nothing you can do about it.
Do you ever get tired of having to get up so early?
No, you know, look, that's the gig. I was never needed a lot of sleep anyway. But I'm one of those people who I believe that the best things happen early.
Al Roker is the author of Storm of the Century: Tragedy, Heroism, Survival, and the Epic True Story of America's Deadliest Natural Disaster. And, of course, you can catch him on the Today Show on NBC. Al Roker, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much.
Ian, thank you.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.